It was December 23rd, 2001. My dad had flown in from Florida to enjoy Christmas with us. The next day was Christmas Eve. He hadn't been home in quite a while, so we drove around the city so he could see all the new and the old sights. The new Miller Park, St. Francis Seminary, where I had spent my years of formation, and then Milwaukee Museum, where we went to see an IMAX movie. I had dropped Dad and Rocky and Debbie off at the entrance and then went off to the garage to park the car. As I was walking back to the museum entrance, I was faced with one of the most painful sights in my life. My dad was lying on the floor inside the door with a man giving him CPR. Soon, the paramedic squad from the fire station across the street arrived. Dad was loaded on the ambulance, and I was allowed to ride next to the driver as we drove to St. Mary's Hospital. On the way, we stopped several times as they tried in vain to resuscitate him. At the hospital, a doctor came out with a grim face to tell us that my dad had indeed died. I remember the feeling of flatness as I had to make the arrangements to transfer his body back to Miami, make our travel arrangements, fly, and then standing at the gravesite, all very clinical, astroturf surrounding a neat hole that was opened by a backhoe. A tent had been erected, chairs placed, an electric casket elevator. But even throughout all of this, I had the feeling of Jesus standing by my side, holding my hand, as was suggested on the first reading from Ezekiel. Let's take a look around the world at different funeral customs. Well, we can look at the TV every day and see our military heroes in their caskets wrapped with the stars and stripes. Palestinians carried in stretchers wrapped in cloth. Israelis in plain wooden boxes wrapped with the Star of David. In New Orleans, the graves are all above ground because of the high water table around the city. Paris has the City of the Dead, the bones of over 6 million people are buried right under the streets of Paris. In Asia, in some places, they leave out the dead so that the birds can eat the flesh. In India, they use funeral pyres. When I was visiting Africa, I remember as we were driving through the bush, all towns had cemeteries with very large areas of disturbed ground as new graves. AIDS had taken a great toll on the population of villages. But also, death takes on many other forms. Addiction to drugs, alcohol, porn, work, abuse of TV or computer time, mental or physical abuse, bigotry. And throughout all of this, Jesus wants to take us out of our graves. But just like for Lazarus, he needs help to move the stones and to remove the bindings. Also, we need to have the bindings removed from us. There was a young woman who had been diagnosed with a terminal illness. She had been given a very short time to live. So as she was getting her things in order, she contacted her pastor and had him come to her house to discuss the certain aspects of her final wishes. She told him which song she wanted sung at the service, what scripture she wanted read. Everything was in order. The pastor was preparing to leave when the young woman suddenly remembered something very important to her. "There's one more thing," she said. "What's that?" the pastor said. "This is very important," the young woman continued. "I want to be buried with a fork on my right hand." The pastor stood looking at the woman, not knowing quite what to say. "That surprises you, doesn't it?" the young woman asked. And the pastor said, "Well, to be honest with you, I'm puzzled by the request." The young woman explained, "In all my years of attending socials and dinners, I always remember that when the dishes of the main course are being cleared away, someone will always inevitably lean over and say, 'Keep your fork.' It was my favorite part because I knew that something better was coming, like a velvety chocolate cake or a deep dish apple pie, something wonderful and with substance. So I just want people to see me there in that casket with a fork in my hand, and I want them to wonder, 'What's with the fork?' Then I want you to tell them, 'Keep your fork. The best is yet to come.'" The pastor's eyes welled up with tears of joy as he hugged the young woman goodbye. He knew this would be one of the last times he would see her before her death. But he also knew that the young woman had a better grasp of heaven than he did. She knew that something better was coming. At the funeral, sure enough, people were walking by the young woman's casket and they saw the fork placed in her right hand. Over and over, the pastor heard, "What's with the fork?" And over and over, he smiled. During his homily, the pastor told the people of the conversation he had with a young woman shortly before she died. He also told them about the fork and about what it symbolized to her. He told the people how he could not stop thinking about that fork. He also told them that they probably would not be able to stop thinking about it either. The best is yet to come. There are deaths of our family and friends, of course, but we also face death when we lose our jobs, flunk out of college, get a horrible disease, when we lose our physical or mental strength in our old age, when we give up plans of being married or having children, when we have our last child go off to college or get married. Is new life possible beyond these and other graves? The believer hearing today's scripture is encouraged to believe that God has not abandoned us at our graves. He will call out our names, saying a life-giving word and breathe into us a resurrecting spirit. He will say, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, even if he dies, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die." And then he will ask, "Do you believe this?" And we can respond like Martha did, "Yes, Lord, I have come to believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, the one who is coming into this world, what are the graves in your life today? Jesus wants to take us out of those graves. Will you allow him to remove the stones covering your graves?